is the Apprentice Series podcast, and we are on episode 6. And we're really enjoying this journey of unpacking what Jesus started and how you and I can be a part of it, how we can be invited into apprenticing under Jesus and becoming more like him, doing the things he did for the reasons he did them and being motivated by the things that motivated him. And Chris joins me again today. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Becky. That sounded very formal. Chris joins me again today.
Putting on my best broadcasting voice.
Becky, I'm very excited to be joining you again today.
Yes, and we are going to be talking about a couple of episodes ago, we talked about how we're invited into a real relationship with God as our Heavenly Father. That's something that Jesus modeled. Today we're going to be on the sort of the more horizontal plane of looking at our relationships with other people and the important role that they play in us apprenticing under Jesus, in us becoming everything that we're called to be, and in us growing in our faith.
So I hope people are kind of picking up the direction that we're going with this. So we launched into the podcast talking about what it meant to be an apprentice and a follower and why that was Jesus's call to us first. And then we talked about the mission that Jesus is inviting us into. And then these last two or three episodes and going on for another couple after this, we're talking about, okay, well, what does that actually look like then? What does it look like and how do we join in with this mission that Jesus is calling us? How do we apprentice Jesus? And so we've talked about the importance of connecting with God. We've talked about the importance of allowing our minds to be shaped. And today we're talking about the importance of real relationships with other people or connecting with others. So we're getting into the kind of practicalities, I think, of what it means to follow Jesus.
Yeah. So Chris, a bit more of a serious question as we begin this podcast. We're not talking about roast potatoes again, as we did in the last episode. What relationship would you say has shaped you the most?
I know, and you were going to ask me this question, and I'm finding it quite hard to like pinpoint one. There's been, as you'd expect, multiple relationships in my life. I've been married to Ruth for I should know the exact number of years, but a long time, more than 30 years, and that's been a hugely significant relationship in my life, as you can imagine, and an incredible relationship, an incredible positive one. And I think anybody in any marriage would say that the hope is that you're shaping each other through that process. But journeying with somebody that closely and that intimately through so many different stages of life, I guess, seeing the way that Ruth has reacted to me, and hopefully I've reacted to her through those different stages of life, holding each other through difficult times, talking about new adventures, you know, all of that kind of stuff. That's been hugely influential relationship in my life. But similarly, I'm blessed to have a really great relationship with my dad, and he's my hero, actually. And so just that relationship has shaped me. I have great friends that I've had for many years, and they have definitely shaped my life. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint one, I think. And I suspect that's true for many of us, that we would point to a number of different relationships in our lives. But I think the common thing I would say when I think about all the relationships in my life that have shaped me, it has been about what we've experienced together. So who I've been with and journeyed with in sections and periods of my life, and maybe experiences I've had with those people. If you've been around our church, you sometimes hear me talk about my great friend Ian, who's a huge friend of mine. We've known each other even longer than we've known our wives. But we had an amazing experience together when we were 16. We went to Kenya together on a trip to help build a dormitory for a school. And that is one of the reasons why I think we have been so significant in each other's lives, because we've had experiences. We had a profound experience at the very beginning of our friendship, and we've continued to have those. So for me, that's the common factor in all of those relationships, is the what we've experienced together and journeyed through together. Yeah. And you?
My relationship with my siblings is a huge standout to me. I'm one of four, and that's that's kind of shaped a lot about me, I think, just having multiple siblings. That's always been a very precious relationship to me. And there's a 6-year age gap between me and my next brother down. And the change of that relationship over time, I remember it very, very well as a 6-year-old becoming a big sister. And that really was something I really took on and took very seriously as part of my identity. It's still something that's incredibly important to me. But having that relationship evolve, and now my younger brother's becoming my friends, and inputting into me and teaching me so much, that continues to be a huge shaping influence in my life. So, yeah.
So I think most of us would acknowledge, as we've just done, and it'll be different relationships for different people, won't we? But connecting with other people has been hugely shaping in our lives. So we're going to think today about, well, what does that look like when it comes to our apprenticing of Jesus? We've talked about connecting with God and connecting with Jesus. We understand that. But where do other people... what place do other people have in our apprenticing of Jesus, our following of Jesus? What role do they play? What role do we play in their lives, and how does that shape us? And one of the things I'm interested in is Jesus's understanding of that, and how Jesus encouraged us into that. And you're going to talk to us about a reflection of one of Jesus's first followers on what Jesus made possible for us in terms of our relating to other people. And I wonder if actually sometimes this is not talked about enough in church life. We often talk about what Jesus does for us to kind of restore our relationship with God. I wonder how often we talk about actually what Jesus does in terms of restoring our relationship with other people. So I'm going to get you into that in just a minute, but I want to encourage people, as we've shared kind of those stories, I'm sure people are thinking about people in their own lives, or maybe they're also kind of thinking, well, maybe I don't have those sorts of relationships, or maybe I did have and I've lost somebody or whatever. And people have moved on from my life or whatever it might be. I want to say, I think what we're about to unpack is an encouragement for us, if maybe people have listened to you and I sharing those positive and thinking, oh, I wish I had more of that in my life, or I haven't had that, and my parents haven't been great, or I haven't had a great relationship, or a marriage has broken down, or I'm single and I don't know where those people are. So that was just something I think it was quite important. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that stuff that Jesus was doing to help us in our relationships with each other?
Yeah, I always think that a compelling version of faith would account for the fact that relationships, one, are so important to us. They're something we long for, but also would account for the fact that relationships are really difficult and give us a way through them. And that's something that I find so compelling about trying to apprentice under Jesus in my life, is that I really believe I haven't found a better guide on how to relate to other people. And that's true for close relationships, but it's also true for interactions with others on a day-to-day basis. And it's a guide for how to deepen relationships as well. And I just think that, to me, makes for so many reasons, Christianity is so compelling to me, because it has as much to say about how we can relate to one another as it does to say about how we can relate to God. And that makes it very real and applicable for real life, doesn't it? Because that's, you know, that so much of our life is lived out. The quality of our life is so determined by the people we're surrounded with and how we can relate to them. So,
yeah. And it's entirely logical as well, right? I mean, it's entirely logical. If there is a God, and God creates human beings in his image, and God makes human beings for a relationship, it's entirely logical that Jesus, who is God as well as the Son of God, would know the best way for us to relate to each other. So it makes it, you know, again, people maybe listen to this thinking, well, I don't believe God, that kind of, but at the very least, I think we would all have to acknowledge, well, that makes sense. Yes. If there was, it would make sense that God, Jesus, would know the best way for us to relate to each other and have something to say about that.
Yeah, yeah, Yeah. So there's this letter called Ephesians, which is in the New Testament part of the Bible. That's the part written after and about Jesus. It's called Ephesians because it's written to a group of Jesus followers in a place called Ephesus, which is in a coastal area in modern day Turkey. The extraordinary thing that happened after Jesus, which nobody really anticipated and caused a lot of friction and has to be worked out a lot in the early church, in the early communities of Jesus followers, is that Jesus opened up access to God and said anybody could be part of his movement, no matter what tribe they were from, where they were from, what they had done, what language they spoke, what family they were a part of. And Jesus, as a Jew, to open up his movement in that way was really radical, because it was core to Judaism that they were separate from the world around them, that God had chosen them as a set apart people, and that they were to live in certain ways that meant that they were set apart from the world around them and set apart from the Gentiles. That is non-Jews. That's the Jewish word for non-Jews. And Gentiles weren't very keen on Jewish people at all, because nobody likes people who think they're different from the rest of the world
and
around
superior.
Them.
They often thought they were superior.
Thought they were superior, but there was also tremendous persecution. Jewish people were sort of looked down on. They weren't sort of at this time, it's Roman society. It was a lot about status and being elite, and the Jewish nation wasn't particularly wealthy. They weren't particularly, all the Romans were sort of clean shaven, and the Jewish people had beards and they looked a bit more raggedy. And there was just so much division between those people groups. And the radical thing about Jesus's movement was that it invited anybody, whether they were Jewish or Gentile, to enter into his community. And that caused a great deal of friction. And Paul writes this letter to a group of people who are comprised of both people from a Jewish background and a Gentile background. And he's trying to unite them around something, a shared experience, almost a shared commonality. So Paul writes this: "For Christ himself, Jesus himself, has brought peace to us." Peace, he's speaking peace because their community is characterized by division and fighting and hostility. So he's brought peace to us. "He united Jews and Gentiles into one people when, in his own body on the cross, he broke down the wall of hostility that separated us. He did this by ending the system of law with its commandments and regulations." So that was the law that kept Jewish people separate from the rest of the world. "He made peace between Jews and Gentiles by creating in himself one new people from the two groups. Together as one body, Christ reconciled both groups to God by means of his death on the cross. And our hostility towards each other was put to death." Absolutely love what is going on in that passage. So Paul talks about the fact that because of Jesus's sacrificial death on the cross, that he believed that in Jesus's death, Jesus took on the problems of the world and the pain of the world and the consequence of all the stuff that humanity gets wrong, and that he dealt with that he paid the price for that on the cross, that was something that could be applied to any person who wanted to accept that. And that therefore meant that they had a new shared commonality. There was something new that united people. And it meant there was no more reason for there to be separate groups. Speaking like this to people who thought so clearly of themselves in terms of their identity, either as Roman or as Greek or as the tribe they were a part of or as Jewish, it was so offensive and it was so new. And Paul is essentially saying Jesus has made it so that there's no reason for division. Division might still exist. We might make up a reason, but there's a possibility of us finding complete common ground. And that last line, "Our hostility towards each other was put to death as Jesus was put to death." What are your reflections on that passage, Chris?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's deeply profound, isn't it? Fantastically liberating. And I think, again, I can only imagine these groups of people hearing this, but particularly for the Jewish people, because, you know, he's saying that all that stuff you've been living your life by, you know, that's ended. Jesus ended the system of law with its commands and regulations. There is a new thing. And that system of law with its commands and regulations was one of the key things that separated the Jewish people from everybody else. They did that. Nobody else did. And that was a key mark of the separation. And we're being told that's gone. And there is a new thing that God is doing. And it's the new thing that is uniting people together. So in his death on the cross, Jesus is not just vertically, you know, reconciling us to God, but horizontally reconciling people to each other, because everybody needs what he's on offer. It doesn't matter whether you're Jewish, a gender, or whatever, everybody needs it. And that would be true for us today. Everybody needs to know God loves them, would give his son to die for them so they could be in a relationship with God. Everybody needs to know that. And just bringing us forward 2,000 years, we will never lock eyes with another human being who doesn't need this and who hasn't been offered it by God, who Jesus didn't do this for. So we'll never, it's a double negative, so we'll never come across somebody who Jesus didn't do this for. That ought to shape our thinking about our connections with other people.
Yeah. For Paul and for everybody who came after Jesus, it was an essential outworking of grasping the good news about Jesus that we no longer lived with hostility towards other people. Because living with continued hostility towards others meant living in disconnection from the reality and the truth that on the cross, Jesus had made forgiveness possible. He'd forgiven the unforgivable. He'd forgiven each of us. That he'd made grace available. That he'd acted with mercy. That he hadn't borne a grudge. That he'd borne our problems rather than bearing a grudge and dealt with them. That he had offered himself for humanity, for everybody. And the only possible outworking of that he'd offered himself also in this culture, you know, there was incredible social segregation. Social hierarchy was a huge part of the Roman order and an important part of Jewish order as well. So there's this amazing passage in the book of Galatians, which was written to a church in Galatia, where it talks about in Christ there is now no longer male or female. There is no longer slave or free. And Paul's not denying the reality of those people existing in those categories. But what he is saying is it's not relevant for where you stand with one another or with God. That it was an absolute essential expression of what it meant to apprentice under Jesus, that you were willing to associate yourself with people you wouldn't have associated yourself with before, and that you were working on removing hostility from your relationships and from your heart within you. And adopting new ways of living, like Jesus, that made connection possible. So we see all of these one another invitations in the writings after Jesus. Love one another, forgive one another, bear with one another, humble yourself, think of others as better than yourself, think of the interests of others over yourself. And it's all of this is crafting this new way of living. Like the old way is gone and this new way dictated by love has come, that makes deep connection possible, and that actually gives us a way to relate to others. And that's incredibly hard. We find that incredibly hard. And Jesus knew that. And he made it so. For example, with forgiveness, that's an incredibly hard thing to do, to forgive somebody who's wronged us. But Jesus gives us somewhere to put that by saying, I'm taking on. He's not saying nobody, you know, it doesn't matter if somebody's hurt you, but he is saying, I've taken on any vengeance that you want to enact on them. I've taken that on. So you haven't got to get back. You haven't got to get even. It's possible for you to forgive. It's hard, but I've made a way for it to be possible just as I've forgiven you. I'm going to go on and on in a minute, so interrupt me, Chris.
Well, the only other thing that strikes me as you're talking, as we read that passage, is it just feels incredibly humbling to me. Because I think about the times where, I can say that, you know, I haven't gone and thumped anybody recently, but I do carry hostility around in my heart and my mind towards other people who have hurt me in the past or whatever, who may be causing stress or tension or whatever it is. I do carry that around so often in my heart and my mind. And yet I'm reminded through all of this and all that you've just said of my need for forgiveness and reconciliation, all that which Jesus achieves for me, and that's humbling to then reflect on that and think, well, why am I not finding it in my heart to do that for other people? That I was so desperately in need of the walls that would separate me from God being dealt with, yes. and they were dealt with by Jesus. How can I possibly then go around erecting walls of hostility between myself and other people? And that can come in so many different ways. It can come, yes, in feeling spiteful towards or vengeful towards somebody who may be hurt, but it can come in subtler ways. You know, I can build walls up between people who are different to me or who look different to me or who come from a different background to me or who are in a different demographic group or a different socioeconomic group or whatever. Actually, we can do that stuff very easily and quickly, I think, and I find it very humbling to be reminded of my own need, both from God and from other people, for forgiveness and redemption and all that sort of stuff. I find it very challenging. Mm.
There's this fantastic book, and I would recommend this to anybody who wants to get a bit better at relating to other people, called Everybody's Normal Until You Get to Know Them. It's by one of my favourite authors, John Ortberg.
Best book.
Yes. and the premise is helping us see that everything we spot and point out in others that winds us up is also present in us, and that's just the reality of being humans. And he uses this fantastic picture, which I love and think of often. He opens one of his chapters asking, how do porcupines dance? Porcupines obviously being very, very spiky. And he talks about how that's what we're like. We're spiky. We have hard edges. There's either because of things we've been through or opinions we have or the way we were raised, or just our innate sort of difficultness as being human beings, we're spiky towards other people, and we can hurt other people, and we know what it's like to have somebody else's needle press into us as well, that human beings are capable of really mucking up relationships pretty badly. So we're like porcupines. So how do we get close to others? And we might think the solution is, well, you can't get close to other people. But porcupines do this thing, apparently, where they rise up on their hind legs and where their soft tummies are, and they can sort of dance together. I don't know if this is true. This might be absolute nonsense. I've never seen it on a David Attenborough program. But and so he asks the question, and it's really what the rest of the book is about, is how do we as spiky, prickly people learn to dance with one another? How do we learn to relate to one another and to let the soft side be the thing that makes contact with other people? And that's what I'd love for us to unpack now, is if this is the reality that Jesus has invited us into, that we get to relate to one another in that way, if relationships are so important in shaping us, how do we actually do that? How do we relate to one another and connect with one another in light of the way that we are? So do you want to walk us through some of the things that we can do to connect with others, that grow us and that help us to relate to others too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think perhaps the first and maybe the most important thing to do is simply to care about other people. And that sounds like quite trite, doesn't it? But actually, Often we don't. One of the great changes and shifts in our worldview, in our culture, in the Western world over the last, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, has been a shift from the collective to the individual. So there's been a shift in our worldview from the importance and significance of community to the importance and significance of me as an individual. And that leads in some cases to a breakdown in the capacity to care about other people. And that isn't how we were built. We're in great danger if we lose that. So number one thing, I think, is just to be interested, curious, and care about other people. Because when you find a way to do that, then you start to listen, you start to have conversation, you start to, instead of worrying about forcing your opinion on somebody, listen to theirs, all of those kind of things. There's a TED talk that I love. You know, TED talks are those kind of short 10, 15 minute talks that are often done at conferences and available to us online and stuff like that. I saw one a few years ago by a psychologist called Kelly McGonigal. And I looked that up actually just before we were recording this podcast to see how many times her TED Talk has been viewed now. And it's 32.5 million views her TED Talk has had. And it's about stress, actually. And she's coming at this idea from the point of how we cope with stress, actually. But one of the fascinating things she unpacks there is that one of the antidotes to stress is a hormone that's produced in our brains called oxytocin, which is very good for us. And when one of the things that you know, stress does bad things to our health, not just emotionally and mentally, but physically. And oxytocin actually heals those things. It almost literally heals damaged cells in our hearts that have been caused by stress. So that's fascinating, number one. But then she looks at, well, how does oxytocin get released in us? And there are a number of ways, but one of the ways oxytocin gets released in us is when we demonstrate care to another human being. And I think that's absolutely extraordinary, that caring for others can literally heal us physically because of the release of that chemical, which then heals up broken cells and stuff in our human makeup biology. And that, I just, really worth going listening. It's a 40-minute talk. Go and find it. You can find it, Kelly McGonigal. Absolutely fascinating. But what it just shows to me is the brilliance and genius of God who created us, who wants us to care for other people, and actually has done something in our biology that means that's good for us. And so caring for others is one of those things, I think, that helps us do this, and not only helps us in breaking down walls of hostility that may come between us, but helps us be better people all around, physically, emotionally, mentally, health-wise.
Yeah, it's the best way to gain relationships, isn't it? So very, very rarely are we taught that the basis of actually finding friendship or finding romantic relationship or any of the kinds of relationships we might desire is that we start trying to care for and love somebody else. You know, we're often just told to sort of look for someone who will treat you like this, or look for a friend who will accept you just as you are. And when we make the first move, we actually find ourselves, one, being people somebody else might actually want to be around quite a bit. And also that we set the tone for great friendship and great relationship. So I love that. There's a statistic, I think it's in the Everybody's Normal Until You Get to Know Them book, that connectedness and being part of community and relationship literally does make, means you have a longer lifespan statistically. And he even says that it's better statistically, it's better to be a chain smoker in community than it is to live alone and never touch a cigarette in your life, which is quite extraordinary.
I've heard that before. And interestingly, Kelly McGonigal says exactly the same thing. She cites a study about people who had experienced great stress and their then lifespan after it. And it's people who were doing this, caring for others, lived longer, or were less likely to die from the effects of stress. And again, I think that's a remarkable thing. And I think, you know, I'd want to encourage people to just such simple ways to do this, just by asking people about themselves. Like, not many people do that now. I'm quite shocked actually by the number of conversations I see, hear, or observe, or a part of, where nobody ever asks the other person anything about themselves. And I think, well, hold on, when did that happen? You know, so just asking great questions. John Maxwell, in his book Winning with People, which is just a great book about the way to build great and healthy relationships with others. John Maxwell is a leadership consultant, and he was a pastor of a church and all that, but well read in all sorts of circles. That book, Winning with People, is a great thing to do and to read. And he talks about how actually the most interesting people to others are the people who are interested in them.
Yes,
and I
exactly.
think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that's tied in with that is serving others. So actually not just caring, but actually that resulting in some kind of action, being there for people, all those things we don't need to go into. But, you know, acts of kindness, serving other people in some way is a great thing to do. And I know we're going to come on to how we finished every podcast with how can we as a church help. But one of the ways we help can help with this is by inspiring and encouraging each other and providing opportunities for us to do some things together that care for and serve other people. And actually a community like a church is just a brilliant way to find those places.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And serving others, that it changes. It's very hard to resent somebody or think badly of somebody when we're serving them, when we're practically doing something to build them up or to, I mean, it's hard to serve somebody, you know, it's very hard to make that first move and to serve even when we feel we're struggling or feel resentful of them. But it does, it's a posture that shapes the way that we view others. And it most importantly drops down the way we see ourselves, as in it doesn't make us think less of ourselves, but makes us think of ourselves less. People often say that, don't they? It makes us humble. And it, you know, humility brings us face to face with the fact that, you know, we're not that much better than other people.
And I think one of the things that, you know, if there have been walls of hostility or and again, you know, it's maybe a different thing, and it's something that we need to work on about forgiving others and that kind of stuff. But where there may have been subconscious walls of hostility or unconscious walls that we've put up between ourselves and other people or whatever, simply the best way to break those walls down is to be interested in other people, to come to care, to serve, to be a part of. You know, I think about like racial division, for example. And one of the great things that we love about our church community over the last 7 or 8 years is the increasing diversity we've seen in ethnicities and races in our church community, which is fantastic. How we truly embrace that is by truly finding out about each other. And it would be a tragedy if a church family community like ours, even subconsciously or unconsciously, was split into different groups. And the way that we proactively avoid that is by being curious about other people and where they're from and what their story is and what their journey's been and all that kind of stuff. And sadly, it doesn't happen enough in church life across all kinds of different barriers and demographics and all that kind of stuff. And just asking questions and being interested in people, I think, is really important. Let's just sort of bring this back into the purpose and the motivation. The reason for this is part of our apprenticing Jesus has to be building real relationships with other people as well as a real relationship with God. And we can't follow Jesus and not have a desire to love people and build real relationships with people. It just doesn't work. Jesus said it. You know, you can't love God and then not love people. That's not how this works,
yes.
He said. So a vital part of our growth in our apprenticing and following of Jesus has to be how we're relating to other people and serving them, caring for them, serving alongside them in different ways.
Yeah.
We get to know people so well when we do something with them to help another bunch of people.
We should say at this point that Jesus's invitation and, well, call, actually command to anyone who wants to apprentice under him to love others doesn't mean having super squishy feelings about everybody we encounter. But one of the best ways I've heard somebody unpack what does it look like to love as Jesus loved, because Jesus sometimes spoke quite harshly to people, and he had some boundaries with people who were very offensive to him, and but he continued to love them, and the kind of love that he models, a guy called C.S. Lewis, who wrote the Narnia Chronicles, most famous for that, but wrote loads of books about what it means to be a Christian, having had a conversion, having come to his own mind about Christianity later in life. He wrote about what does it actually mean to love others, and he talks about, I won't get the language exactly right, but he talks about desiring the good for somebody else, and desiring also that they, if they are not currently, if they're currently hurtful and spiteful, desiring that that wouldn't always be the case. And often our response to somebody who is hurtful or spiteful or unkind is to kind of get a bit of a kick out of writing them off. And every time they do something that reinforces our opinion of them, we're like, oh, well, I knew they were like that. But that to love another is to continue to behave as if a change might be on the horizon, and to continue to treat them according to how they could be. And yeah, I have botched the language. I think it's in Mere Christianity he talks about this. But I think that's that desire for the good for others, even if they're not currently living up to what is good. Not writing people off, not giving up on them, but wanting to call out the good in them, and wanting to treat them according to how they could be. I think that's so essential in faith community, that our desire is, even for somebody who may have hurt us and we may want to write off, that our desire is for change to happen, for reconciliation to be possible. And it might not, sometimes it's unwise to seek reconciliation when somebody else is continuing in bad path. I mean, often it's unwise to seek reconciliation, but not to hope that that never happens, not to hope that they continue in their in bad behavior or in being a spiky person, but to hope that change might be possible and to act according to that. And that includes being interested and invested in where people are spiritually, and not writing off people who might not be in the same place as us spiritually, might not believe the same things that we do, but being willing to be on the journey with people who are in different places to us, in terms of their beliefs and their mindsets as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're so right. We're also not saying here that boundaries aren't appropriate or abusive people shouldn't be, kept away and all of that kind of stuff. We're not saying that at all. And it is possible to have forgiven people and to hope for the best for people and all that kind of stuff, and not be in proximity to them. That is possible, and indeed very appropriate in situations and circumstances, particularly those that are abusive or that would be damaging to us and to our health and our well-being and that kind of stuff. So, and again, I think Jesus models that. He modeled boundaries and those kind of things. So we're not for a minute saying that this is a, let everybody walk all over you and continue to abuse and all of that kind of stuff. But it is possible to have found and to hope for the best for people and to have found a way to forgive, even with people that you're not actually interacting with, or for all valid and good reasons.
Yeah, because it's an important part of us being transformed, isn't
Absolutely.
It? When we harbour that. Jesus actually, he uses some really extreme language about when we're dismissive of people or have hatred towards somebody, that it's almost like murdering them.
Yes.
And actually, I think what he's getting at is what C.S. Lewis unpacks, that we're basically sentenced. We're basically saying they're dead. You know, we even use that language, and they're dead to me.
Yeah.
As if, you know, and certainly that doesn't mean, as you say, bringing somebody back into relationship with you who is really harmful to you. Certainly that doesn't mean that. But not writing them off as somebody who may as well be dead,
yes,
or having, who has no hope for ever changing. And that when that does something awful inside of us, when we harbor such hatred and resentment towards another person, that we've written them off completely, and we wish they weren't.
Yeah.
We wish they weren't.
Yes. Yeah.
And that we come alive again inside when we're able to forgive and let God deal with what only God can deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So we can help in terms of all those positive things and helping people build real relationships with others. We can help in terms of some resources that would help in those relationships that we were just talking about in the last few minutes, where perhaps we need to find forgiveness, but not necessarily be in the same orbit as. We've done some series here about the way to find forgiveness and that kind of stuff. So we've got some stuff that people can listen to and engage with about that. We can help in that helping people find great relationships, great friends and people. We can help because we have opportunities to serve together on teams, and so many of those relationships that we see flourishing in church life are often when people have been serving together. So we'd love to have conversations about how we can help with that. And I just think a church community is a great way to practice all that stuff we've been talking about today, because we're all weird. None of us are normal. We have to, you know, be alongside people from all walks of life and all stages of life. It's very intergenerational, which is a wonderful and very positive thing for our relationships. But, you know, we know brings its challenges as well. So it's a great way for us actually to practice building real relationships and being humble enough to do that. That's what I've got in terms of how we help people. Well, be a part of a church community like this, or one local to where you are, and you'll develop a lot of those skills.
The first step, you know, we often want to wait for somebody to take the first step towards us, and it feels lovely when that does happen. But 9 times out of 10, it's on us to take that initial step, isn't it?
And be curious about other people, and in a positive way, not a creepy way. But, you know, in a positive way, you know, just ask people about themselves. Everybody likes talking about themselves. It's a great way to start, isn't it? So cool.
Awesome. Great. It's been great to connect with you, Chris, as we've had this conversation. It's been great to connect with you guys who are listening. And we hope that this has helped you foster some greater connection in your life, and to build some real relationships as you seek to pattern yourself as an apprentice of Jesus, if indeed that is what you're trying to do. If that's not what you're trying to do, thank you for listening all the way through this podcast. That's extraordinary.
Well done.
Cool. We will catch you.